3 once again. This is our 26th episode. Brian Miller on the other side.
Wow, that makes us literally half a year, right?
Yeah, it's a half a year.
If my math is correct.
We have been at this for 6 months now. So, actually a little more than 6 because I think we took a couple off.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was like a vacation in there, Christmas-ish or something. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. It's some kind of a...
Woo! I wish I should have had a noisemaker here on my desk.
Is it the confetti anniversary?
I don't know.
I don't think what's the half of a paper anniversary.
I don't know what it would be. It would be... Probably the longest I've stuck to a lot of things.
There
are many things that I have not stuck to for 6 months.
I've quit drinking and changed my diet 3 times since we started this podcast.
I'm actually in the middle of Lent, so.
Oh, interesting.
Well, actually, towards the end. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that in the third segment.
Yeah,
I guess
that's a tease. That's what they call a tease in the radio business.
And what I think probably is the news item of the week is President Obama going to Cuba.
Yeah.
And it's actually the first time a president has ever landed in Cuba. The last time, I think, was Calvin Coolidge, who took a battleship.
Interesting.
Which my opinion... You know, if I were the president, and it's probably the reason why I never will be.
I think I see where you're going with this, and I like it.
I would have taken the battleship.
Oh, that's the way to show up. If I could show up in a battleship, that's how I would go everywhere.
I mean, you know, it's not much different because, you know that Air Force One was escorted by F-16s. So, you know, there were... You know, I'm sure, you know, they're not talking about it, but they had to prearrange that. They had to say, you know, yeah, we're going to have F-16s flying over while the plane lands, and they're going to be over the island the entire time the president's going to be there. You know that was happening. They didn't say, and Cuba had to say, yeah, okay, you know, what can we do?
You know what would have been a classy move? Would be like swim over there on a raft. You know, like when in Rome, so when in Cuba, you know, you're like, hey, you know what? It turns out this is really tough. We're sorry about that.
Well, actually, that's the way to go home.
it's a little diplomatic exchange.
You get on the rubber inflatable ferry. But it's
been since what, 1951? When did we
Coolidge?
Break ties with Cuba? When did we break ties with Cuba?
59.
59. Okay.
I believe.
I was trying. You know, it's funny because most of my knowledge on it, but I do the Godfather math on that. I'm like, okay, Michael Corleone came back from World War II. He became the Don. They're still in Cuba. So I'm like, 59. Got it.
Yeah. No. It's for me. I was born in. Well, for, it doesn't matter. So yeah. So it's a birthday sort of thing with me.
Oh, exciting. There you go.
Is it? I actually share a birthday with, not the year, of course, but I share a birthday with Fidel Castro.
Oh, interesting. That's a good celebrity birthday to have.
Do you hear me almost slip into Spanish there? I almost said President Castro.
Wait a minute. Are you some sort of sleeper cell thing?
Castro.
Like that old German movie where the Germans are pretending to be Americans. It's a war movie. And they almost make it out, and they stop for gas, and the guy says, can you put some petrol in the car? And the other American guy's like, wait a minute, petrol?
well, you know, I think we've established before that the Germans all have British accents in the movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because it's the eviler sounding accent. I don't think this German really evil. Give him a British accent.
It's and I'm pretty sure when Tom Cruise did that whatever that was.
Oh, Valkyrie.
Yeah, when he did Valkyrie, I think he tried to do a British accent so he would appear German, and the director
balance it out kind of.
And the director says, "Nah, just you can't. No,
you're no.
I'm sorry, you are not Hugh Laurie. You are not bilingual."
I have a funny Valkyrie story actually, which is that movie came out right around Christmas. And it was one Christmas day, and for whatever reason, I had the morning free, and I was going to meet my in-laws, and my wife was already over there, And I thought, you know, I've got a couple hours free. I want to go see that Valkyrie movie. It just came out. It's Christmas Day. I'm going to pop into that thing, catch an afternoon show. And I go to show up, and it's kind of a long line at the movie theater. And some movies are sold out, but every single showing of Valkyrie is sold out. And I'm standing there in line. I'm like, oh, man, Valkyrie sold out. And this guy turns to me, and this Jewish guy turns to me and goes, we're Jews. We're all here. And I started cracking up. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, cause, you know, it's the big Jewish movie theater day.
Yeah, which very good marketing.
Oh, genius marketing.
Opening so Valkyrie, opening on Christmas Day. And, you know, 90% of America is, that's a weird day to open that movie.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, the guy in front of me was, it pleased him so much to tell that to me. I was just laughing my ass off. But it was funny. So then I couldn't get into Valkyrie, but well, I'm at the movies, you know, I'm just going to see something. So there was seats aplenty at the movie Doubt about the abusive priests from the Christian church. There was like me and two other people in Doubt.
Huh.
Which is sort of a grim day to release that movie, I thought. It was like...
Well, again, they probably thought, they probably felt that it would have the same sort of appeal.
But like, yeah, like the atheist vote instead of, or whatever, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah. So they thought it would be, again, the same appeal. It's not the movie you go to see after you're sick of the family.
Right. It turns out, though, it's the movie ends up being full of just very unpunctual Jewish people. Well, Valkyrie sold out. What are you going to do? Let's go see Philip Seymour Hoffman.
So, what's your take on Cuba,
though? I'm curious to hear what you think about. Because I was just saying that I feel kind of – I mean, it seems obvious to me that we should open ties with Cuba to some degree. It seems like a silly grudge to keep holding.
Well, you know, for me, I think it's almost as if the president folded with four aces in his hand. And mm-hmm. you know, I've said for the longest time, yeah, the best way to get rid of Castro is to just show the Cubans how much he's been lying to you. Because sure. if you listen to Castro, it's just a nightmare 90 miles across that stretch of water. It is just people are poor. People are trying to get into Cuba because their lifestyle is so good and their health care is so awesome. And that's kind of what the people are. They don't believe it because it is only 90 miles away.
Yeah, right.
You know, you can get radio over that and some TV if you turn the. Turn the antenna and have new tubes installed.
Yeah.
little Cuba joke.
It took me a second, a little old technology joke. I had to picture a bunch of old American cars.
But you know, but if we had opened trade with Cuba, yeah, it would have eliminated their power. But it's like he was at the perfect moment. Because when the wall fell in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed and Russia was no longer able to support Cuba. Mm-hmm. Russia was pretty much supporting Cuba just because, you know, it was a middle finger right in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico.
Absolutely. We would love to have had an island, you know, a stone's throw away, you know, Sarah Palin's house away from Russia just to spite.
We do, but
Alaska 90
well
miles
no I don't mean that I mean we've got troops in Poland.
Oh yeah, we have troops in Poland for sure. I mean, I just mean like, yeah, well, I guess it's similar. I guess, yeah, it's true.
You know, that's why Russia was so adamant about Cuba. It's like, well, let's see how you like it.
You're right. No, I don't. I guess it's one of those things where you're like, I don't like them Ruskies, but I can't blame them for that one.
But you know, when the Soviet Union fell, they could no longer afford to have that middle finger in the middle of Gulf of Mexico. So they kind of told Castro, they said, you know, you are, you're being cut off. You're going to have to pull yourself up by your own, bootstraps.
Sure.
And they went, oh heck, what are we going to do now? And then Hugo Chavez, who was rich with oil money, said, never fear, comrade, I will take care of you. And throughout the 90s and into the 2000s, Venezuelan oil money was keeping Cuba afloat.
Oh.
But have you seen anything about Venezuela lately?
No.
Oh my gosh, they don't have electricity this week.
Oh my goodness. Well, I can't imagine the bottoming out of the oil prices is good for Venezuela either.
Exactly, that's why.
Yeah.
So they can no longer support Cuba. So I mean, this was the point where they could have told where Cuba would have come begging to President Obama. As I said, he had four aces and he folded.
That's interesting.
And speaking of folding.
Yeah, there you go.
There's segment one.
Thought about that, but I guess OPEC dropping the prices would screw them as much as it did those North Dakota oil frackers.
Worse.
Well, yeah, because the North Dakota was a tiny thing as opposed to the entire country completely hinging upon that oil revenue.
Yeah. And the other thing is it's pretty much in Venezuela they were pretty much spending it as it came in.
Ah.
Because to try to keep the socialism can't. It's not really good at generating new revenue.
So, if you don't have this like easy source of capital.
Right. So it they were spending as it came in, and then when it stopped, there was no reserve. There was no other industry that the economy could rely on. So it's and everything's free.
Right, or was.
Yeah. So now it's so now because of. Because toilet paper is so valuable, it's all ending up on the black market.
Wow!
So if you've seen pictures of Venezuelan grocery stores, they're completely empty.
Interesting.
And they were trying; they were experimenting with just shutting off because it's summer there. They were experimenting with just shutting electricity off a few hours a day.
Wow! In Iraq.
Yeah. And that didn't work, so it's they shut for the past week. It's been off. They just shut it all off. They've been without electricity for the past. So yeah, it's about. And again, so anyway, so it would have been the prime time to say, okay, we're gonna make, we're gonna make some deals.
Yeah.
And we want all the dissidents released. We want to buy these television transmission towers. We want this return. We want these hotels returned to these families. He really could have made deals. But
yeah, that's it. I know that sounds.
Because Russia can't come in either. Because they're also screwed by the oil prices.
Oh yeah, I bet they are. I didn't even thought about the Russians getting taken on the chin from that.
Oh, and can I say something before we get into the next segment?
Yeah.
I'm House of Cards is almost on my drop list.
Yeah.
It's very close.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that.
I liked it.
I was for the first two seasons, and then I just lost.
Yeah, season three said you got a couple episodes into season four. And I don't think I'm gonna make it through season four.
What episode are you on of season four?
4-4.
Okay, so have you seen that one?
Not yet.
Okay, watch that one.
Okay.
That's the only episode of the season that I watched.
Huh. Okay.
So,
but what drives me nuts is essentially he pissed off Russia, so Russia cut back on oil.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically.
Yeah.
if you think about it, because what really happened was OPEC flooded the market with oil, mm-hmm. and it ended up screwing Russia.
Yep.
So I mean we're actually seeing Hollywood the economics knowledge of Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
On display by comparing reality to what the writers think the way it would work.
Well, but the, would, the the politics and like the policies in House of Cards have always been like you would never let a medical show get by that was that wildly implausible.
Right.
Even Grey's Anatomy has to like maintain like, well, yeah, you got to give a guy blood. Or he's going to die. You can't sit on a guy's neck for an hour and a half. Like, you probably should give him some oxygen, you know. But House of Cards is that bad, I think, at portraying actual politics.
Yeah. It wasn't – in the beginning, I don't think it was that bad.
Well, I think it scooped up in the melodrama.
Yeah,
I think that's what happened was that season one was more politics, and then two, which was fun, was all melodrama, and they tried to get back to the politics of three, but it was like, no, you've gone too far out there.
Yeah.
To be like some realistic like Aaron Sorkin kind of, you know, policy-based show or something, which sounds boring to me anyway to some degree.
Well, Aaron Sorkin politics drive me nuts too.
Because Aaron Sorkin politics, it's just so boring and repetitive. God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every Aaron Sorkin show is exactly the same.
Yeah.
End movie.
But what I was saying is it's so bad there's gas lines now.
Oh, wow.
In House of Cards. And that's
– Oh, I'm not Russia.
No, in House of Cards. Well, there's probably lines in Russia. There's probably lines in Venezuela. We don't have gas lines in the United States anymore. And the reason why is that we don't have price controls on gas.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, like, gas would just get really expensive.
Essentially, yeah. What would happen is we say you can't sell for more than $2 a gallon. Mm. And so any gas that could be sold at $2 a gallon would go there, but there would not be the amount of gas available at $2 a gallon.
Right.
The gas that costs $7 a gallon, nobody's going to sell that for $2 just because the government said that. They're just going to say, screw it. We'll sell it elsewhere. We'll hold on to it and, you know, sure. Hope they come to their senses. And that's what caused the gas lines. It wasn't
interesting.
It wasn't shortages. It was shortages at the price the government mandated.
Oh, that makes sense.
And that's why when you know, Nixon did it first and then mm-hmm. Carter did it again. And that's why we had gas lines in the 70s. Reagan said that's bullshit, and we haven't had price controls on gas, and we haven't had lines.
Sure. So it's like you get $4 gas, but you get as much $4 gas as you want, but it kind of takes care of itself.
Exactly. There's no shortages. There's no shortages when the prices are allowed to fluctuate. Nobody says we're running out of gold.
Yeah, they just say, ooh, good time to buy gold or bad time to buy
gold. Yeah, we're almost out. We are running out of gold. No, as gold becomes more scarce, the price goes up. And the other thing I'd like to point out is, you know, people are like big on recycling. Mm-hmm. Gold is almost 100% recycled.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all because it gets melted down and just changed into different stuff, I assume.
Right, because of the value.
Right, like it was a ring for a little while, and then it was part some wiring. And
oh, my God, it was probably a scarab brooch worn by an Egyptian pharaoh.
Well, there's only so much gold in the world. I mean, it's a limited supply in terms of total percentage of gold. I mean, I'm not making new gold, I would think.
Right. Right. And it can be extracted, you know, from the ocean if the price gets to a certain point where the cost of extraction is profitable.
Oh, sure. Yeah, just like fracking with oil.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, so supplies essentially never run out, even though they're finite. They never run out as long as the price is allowed to fluctuate.
That makes total sense, and it does the House Cards. That is a pretty basic thing. Having gas lines is kind of a
He never put in price controls. Now, if he would have put in price controls, I would have said yeah. But they're talking about gas going to $7 a gallon, so there's no price controls, and yet there's lines. and as he drives by the angry mob at the gas station, they're all flipping him off, and it's like, oh, Secret Service isn't going to allow that.
Yeah, right.
No, sir, we can't go that way. There's an angry mob.
Yeah,
we're going to have to, you're going to have to take a helicopter. You have to take Marine One. It's like, no, he's driving right through the angry mob in his motorcade. They're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, that's why I dropped that show. It was too ridiculous, but not, it was ceased being fun ridiculous.
Too ridiculous, but it takes itself seriously.
Yeah, I'm fine with either way. Be serious and real, or silly and fun, but don't split the difference.
Right. Oh man, we went long on that non-show.
Yeah. We're gonna do a VHS tape here at I'll start at 10:15.
You know, we could almost make this a bonus segment.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
it's good. At the end.
Yeah, because I don't think. Okay.
So see how it works. If you can do it, yeah.
Okay. I don't think we said anything we shouldn't have.
I don't think so.
I don't think there was any swearing. It sounded kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It was spontaneous.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
well, as long as you don't notice anything on the re-listen, then welcome to the bonus segment.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to re-listen, but. Okay. There's segment 1.1.
And second story of the day on Rule of Three here with Tim Slagle is a story that was very personally appealing to me for a weirdly specific reason, but a fella in North Carolina was driving his daughter to school, and a cop pulled him over for like a broken taillight or one of those BS reasons that cops give to pull you over and harass you, see if they can extract money from you for the municipality.
Obstructive view. That's I got that one. I got that one. I was driving into an Indian reservation with Illinois plates, and I got pulled over for obstructed view. And I found out later, no, he just figured I was a meth dealer.
Oh yeah, they just wanted to check you out, you know, or sometimes just give you a ticket, you know, get a little cash for the city. But as they pulled this fellow over, he's driving his daughter to school. It sounds like an upstanding gentleman there. And they go, oh, there's a warrant for your arrest. And they arrested this guy. And the warrant was because 12 years ago, he rented a VHS tape and failed to return it. And the best part is the movie, and the thing that made it interesting to me was that the movie that he rented was Freddy Got Fingered.
Do you remember
Freddy Got Fingered?
I remember the title, but if you had to ask me to give you a synopsis of the plot or who was in it, I would not be able to do it. But I am sure, in fact, I would wager a large sum of money that you know a lot about that film.
I do. And it's my wife loves Freddy Got Fingered. It's like a personal favorite. And she's a very smart lady. And she thinks that is so funny. She just loved it since she was a kid. And it's the movie starring Tom Green. It came out at the height of the Tom Green phenomenon, if you remember that, when he was hosting that MTV show.
Wow.
Yeah, do you remember he had Glenn? It was a Canadian public access show that they brought down. And
no, Glenn. I remember. That is such a Warholian blip.
Yes,
career of Tom Green.
So famous for about a year. I mean, he was huge. During that year, wouldn't you have assumed that he's going to be around for another? This guy could be the next Letterman or something. I mean,
yeah.
He was dating Drew Barrymore. He was in Charlie's Angels. He was just huge. And he just went away. I've never entirely understood. I mean, he does stand up now, and apparently, by the way, is an extremely nice guy. I've heard nothing but good things about him.
Yeah, got to get that in.
Well, no, I'm just saying, I doubt I'll ever work with him, but I have heard that.
As is the nature of trajectories in this business. There is a very good chance.
Yeah, it could happen. But I mean, I know he does some stand-up and stuff. But I remember his big – he kind of peaked with two things. I remember it was Freddy Got Fingered and he had testicular cancer. I don't know if you remember. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe he had to kind of get out of the game at just the wrong time. But he went away for a while and then he came back with a special about testicular cancer. And it was actually really good and really like – it was like the funniest PSA you've ever seen in your life.
Huh.
And it was really kind of poignant. It was like this hour-long special and they like he like had his own surgery filmed and all kinds of kind of he kind of turned the whole cancer diagnosis into comedy. And I'm always kind of surprised that that part hasn't kind of survived more.
That's kind of interesting. Because if he were an actress that had a mastectomy and turned it into that, he would still be getting or receiving awards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, and it was also the classic, you know, nobody comedy never gets appreciated the way drama does. It just, you know, so if he would have made a teary Oprah type special, right? You know, like I said, it would have been. I agree with you. But then instead, he does this kind of silly, like I'm gonna kind of find a way to make this fun and informative and like help myself get through it. But he was so silly about it that it was like, oh yeah, this throwaway goofball. But that's a hard thing to turn into comedy.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Though it does seem to happen a lot.
Yeah. It's the cancer show is quite a
it's a staple now.
So much so, yes, that I, without getting into too much personal detail, had some experience with that and kind of thinking about trying to write it. And then when I started kind of Googling around, I just felt like, man, a lot of people do it and it feels kind of honest. To me, it feels a little exploitative in a way, or a little like, I don't know, like you're looking for an angle or a gimmick.
Yeah, kind of like the alcoholic show.
Yes, yes, very much so. Whereas, you know, when old Tom Green did it back in, gosh, probably, what, 97, 96?
No, it was pretty cutting edge.
Yeah. Back then. And so you know, I have an affinity for Tom Green. And some of the stuff he used to do was very, very ridiculous and childish, but funny. He kind of had he's like a faster burning Sacha Baron Cohen. You know, Sacha Baron Cohen kind of had a similar trajectory, but it stretched out over a few more years.
Right. So getting back to this, so it was 12 years that he had
which is a weird. I mean, I was like, part of me was like, you rented a VHS tape 12 years ago?
Yeah, that's weird too. You know, I could see 22 years and an arrest warrant for it 12 years ago.
Yeah, and but apparently this guy is a pretty upstanding citizen because he didn't have any run-ins with the law for a really long time. Nice little wrinkle to the story. And the reason I even knew about this was somebody retweeted Tom Green tweeting about it, and it came across my Twitter feed. But Tom Green apparently is going to pick up the guy's legal fees because he feels bad for the guy.
No, because it's an investment. It's an opportunity for a comeback.
But I like Freddie Got Fingered in a way.
Not to mention, it's going to be publicity for the film. And you know, every time an angel watches Freddie Got Fingered, is Tom Green gets some wings.
I think probably every time an angel watches Freddie Got Fingered, Harvey Weinstein gets some money or something. I bet you Tom. I don't know. Those deals never work out in your favor, from whatever I've heard. And I remember thinking like, what indignity for this poor guy to get pulled over in front of his daughter and all this too, and. You know, it couldn't have been, of course, you know, this guy's kicking himself. It's like, it couldn't have been that time I rented Bridge Over the River Kwai or a Showboat or, you know.
Well, actually, though, considering the what was being rented most often on VHS tapes in 2004, he was probably pretty lucky that it was Freddie Got Fingered.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. I hope I can make this short. I was selling videotapes back in the 90s. I was actually selling after shows.
Oh, I see what you mean. Right. Like people would sell CDs or now.
Yeah. I was selling videotapes. I was on the top of that. I was at the crest of that wave. I was selling VHS tapes.
Sure.
And one tape I had, I did a bit that I really didn't care much, that I didn't really want to do after September 11th.
Okay, sure.
And I don't want to get into details. My fans know which one it is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really want to do it. So I stopped selling the videotape. Mm-hmm. And a couple years later, so this would be right about that time, my distributor says, you know, I've got a case of videotapes. Mm-hmm. And... you know, do you want them? I'll just send them to you and you can sell them if you want. And I said, yeah, okay. Oh, okay, what the heck? So he sent them to me. And that night I went, I started going into my pitch. I'm doing a, doing a show at a bar in a college town. And I'm going into my pitch. And I turn around and I grab the videotape and I turn around and you should have seen the looks on these kids' faces. It was like grandpa trying to hawk a gramophone record.
You might as well try to sell him a cure-all out of a bottle with a with a guy in a top hat on the front.
And it was just so obvious that I just kind of laughed at myself for even trying it. And what I did was I turned it into actually kind of a funny bit. I said, I was in college and I know every one of you has that couch that rocks. Well, if you stick this under the leg that's short, you can fix that.
I just picture you up in a bar in 2005 going, what do you mean you kids don't need any roller skate keys?
And like I said, it was instantaneous. But it wasn't that long. No, it was like 2000. It was like 2000. So 2001, I stopped.
Sure.
And I pulled it out again like in 2004.
But that was a huge year. Right? That transition to DVDs was fast.
It was amazing how fast that was. To the point, I don't think any other format switched that quickly.
No, I got my first DVD player right when I went to college in 2000. And, I mean, the VCR was like a relic by the time I got out of college.
Yeah.
Speaking of relics, the segment is as overdue as the VHS.
See you on the next side. And we're back with the final segment of the Rule of Three. We are in Holy Week. Today is actually Holy Thursday, which every Thursday is Holy Thursday if you put a W in front of it. But this one is special. This one
Don't
celebrates
you add an L as well.
Pardon?
I think you have to add a second L as well to make that pun work.
Yeah, but when you go to the whole technicality of the joke doesn't work anymore. So.
Pun police.
Hey, yeah, I need an extra L, and I think you might need a comma, too. I think you might need a comma.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Proofreading talk on the final segment of Rule of Three.
But whatever, I don't know how deep you are into the gospel, Brian. But today,
spoiler
actually,
alert, not very.
Today is actually the day. If you specifically, today is the day that Jesus celebrated Passover.
Oh.
Which I don't know. Is Passover celebrated outside? Not on a Friday. I do not know.
Yeah,
that's how that came out. There's bilingualism again.
The lamb's blood and the yada yada. Like I know, but we never really like made a deal of it. Like we were Methodists, and it was like the Easter highlights were pretty much okay. So Lent starts back, whatever. Lent started, 30 days and 30 nights, right? So it started like 26 days ago.
No, 30 days and 30 nights was the rain on the ark.
Right. How long is Lent?
Lent is 40 days.
40 days. Okay, right, because 30 days and 30 nights is the flood, and 40 days and 40 nights is a Josh Hartnett movie where he gives up sex for Lent and then meets the girl of his dreams.
Well, interestingly, Lent is actually over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Lent actually ends with Palm Sunday.
Oh, I didn't think Lent ended until Easter.
Well, you see, that's the thing. After Lent, you go into Holy Week.
So the fasting and the abstaining still continues, right?
It's supposed to. It's supposed to actually, you're supposed to actually double down on it.
Okay, and then Easter is when, that's why you eat all the ham? Is it theoretically you've been avoiding the ham? Or is it just to reassert your total Christianity? Let's eat some ham and show them who we are, boys.
well, here's the thing. Here's the thing the holy days of Christianity coincide with pagan holidays.
Right. Yeah, right. Because you get the solstices, solstice, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. And so the Easter is actually the pagan holiday of renewal. Interestingly, I saw something that that Christmas probably happened in April, they assume. The actual Jesus being born, because
I've heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, the reason being is that the shepherds watched over the sheep, and they only would do that when the sheep were giving birth, and that would usually happen in April in the Middle East. Hmm. So they assumed that Jesus was probably supposed to have been born in April. But what the Catholic Church did, they said, you know, we're never going to sell this to the pagans if they have to give up their holidays. So, right. So one of the earliest marketing geniuses, the
Don Draper of
Don Saint Draper, yes, Don of Saint Don of Draper, said, okay, they want their holiday. Let's just rewrite their holidays, and that's what happened. Easter, interestingly. If you think about it, Easter has no day. You know, Christmas is December 25th, and it's always December 25th, regardless.
Yep. That always threw me off as a kid. St. Patty's Day is a day, right?
Yeah. St. Patrick's Day is the 17th. Easter is specifically, it is the first Sunday after the solstice. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The first Sunday after the first full moon. After the solstice.
Because it's got a real wide range. That used to throw me off. Because Thanksgiving is always pretty much where you think Thanksgiving is going to be. But Easter would just sort of pop up on the calendar sometimes.
Yeah, well Thanksgiving is a little weird too. Because it's like the third Thursday. It's like Election Day. It's like the third Thursday after the fourth Monday or something like that. It's whereas Easter is just, Easter is totally celestial. It's completely celestial. Well, except for the fact that it's on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's and somehow it also coincides with the Passover, which also I believe isn't celestial, but it follows the Jewish calendar, which is also celestial. So it goes by moons rather than months. So it doesn't so it sort of changes through the year. And occasionally Holy Thursday I think will coincide with the Passover. Which is why
it's doing today, presumably, yeah.
Pardon?
Today it is coinciding.
Is it? Is today Passover?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know it was Easter next week until you said it, or Sunday.
Yeah, Easter is kind of fallen by the wayside. It's when I was a kid, Easter was almost as big a holiday as Christmas.
It was a big one, although I don't really know anybody who goes to church anymore, so...
Yeah, well, but not just that. I mean, the celebrations is you would, as a kid, you would wake up really excited,
yeah.
You know, because you know the Easter Bunny who was essentially kind of like Santa Claus, but you're not really sure what he looks like. A little bit more mysterious.
A little more frightening if you really ponder it.
Yeah. I've seen pictures of people where they have a realistic looking giant rabbit. And terrified kids. So a lot of times the Easter Bunny is depicted as a pink, almost like a pink furry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With as like a mascot, but there's no
on a furry bit, by the way, and the Easter Bunny makes two appearances in it. Funny you say that.
So, and it's not, and it's probably because Coca-Cola never sketched the Easter Bunny.
Right. I think that's interesting how much our conception of Santa Claus is shaped by Coca-Cola.
Well, welcome to America.
Well, right. I mean, obviously it existed well before, but it was really codified by Coke.
But anyway, you would get the mysterious visit, and then you'd get up all excited, and then you'd have to wait. I'd have to wait for my dad to set up the movie camera. Which had a bar of lights that always, it seemed, one burned out on Easter morning, but it had like a bar of four floodlights. And then when it was time to come out, is the whole living room would just be bathed in this white light. and that you couldn't look into, and you would come out. And it looks really cute on the movies. When you look back at the movies, it looks really cute because here's these little kids with their hands over their eyes, so they look like they're sleepy.
It's like, no, just blinded.
Yeah, but we actually weren't. And then no tree, so you'd have to run around the house and see where, because the Easter Bunny was a little bit of a prick. Easter Bunny, Santa said, okay, here's your stupid presents right here. You can find them. Is Easter Bunny would hide your basket somewhere around the house. And it wasn't always easy to find.
Did your parents do the classic, the hard-boiled eggs with the coloring, or did they do the plastic eggs with candy in them?
Well, we didn't hide eggs.
Oh.
There were no,
they hid presents.
We would get an Easter basket full of candy.
Right.
And then, yes, there would also be a present.
Ah, but was it like a hint where it was, or you just had to kind of figure out?
No hint.
Interesting. No hint. Well, I think we just did my mom would do the egg hiding. But there wasn't really Easter present.
Yeah, it wasn't like a big present. It wasn't like Christmas. It was just kind of like it was like a dart gun or something.
Yeah.
It was like a small dime store toy, usually. But then it would be a basket full of candy. And the eggs, no, we did the eggs ourselves. We got to, that was like a tradition, like the week before we'd hard boiled eggs and we'd all sit around the table and we'd play with dye.
Yep. No, we definitely did that. The weirdest thing I remember about Easter was Easter itself was all right. It was always a bit anticlimactic because it kind of fires off in the morning and then you can't really eat all this chocolate right in the morning. But Palm Sunday was always the weird one to me because we would always have to do – they would always have like a Palm Sunday pageant and they would always get these palm fronds and they would just reenact it. And I think they would rent a donkey, I think, as best I recall. And we would wave the fronds and then the guy dressed as Jesus would walk down the aisle. And we would recreate. That was always the Palm Sunday, like the recreation. And they would always do like the kind of like the way they would do like the Christmas pageant. They would be like an Easter pageant one Sunday. And it was a really long Sunday, you know.
It's we started going to church here in town. Mm-hmm. And there was the Palm Sunday, the first Palm Sunday we were there, is the priest said, last year we got a donkey. Mm-hmm. And he said it did not work out too well. The donkey became a little amorous. And it was such a disappointment to me for two reasons. Number one, I would have liked to have seen the donkey come into the church. And number two, I wish I would have been there the year before.
My favorite part about that was always the idea that you know, all the religious questions and the miracles and all of this, people are at the church and no, I'm totally into it, but I'm really going to need to see that donkey to buy this whole Palm Sunday thing. I need to see a donkey.
And, and what more proof do you need that God has a sense of humor than putting it?
You're right.
Yeah. You want a donkey? Okay.
Oh, I'll give you a donkey. Well, hopefully everybody's Easter is good, and may all your donkeys be amorous this Easter. Sounds like a Carson curse when he was in Karnak. May your grandmother be assaulted by an amorous donkey.
is that it? Are we at the end? I think we're
that's
at the
it.
End, are we? Okay, we'll see you guys next week. Happy Easter, everyone. TimSlegel.com. All the episodes are posted there.
Yep, and BrianMillerComedy.com, Brian with a Y. See you next week.
Bye.
On the Avenue, Fifth Avenue, the photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the road of gravure. Oh, I could write a sonnet about your Easter bunny.